From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. My first guest today is the senior U.S. Senator for Illinois, Dick Durbin. A Democrat from Springfield, he's got 2 years left on his fifth term in the Senate, and last month he turned 80 years old. On that note, an aide told me he will not be making any announcements on re-election until the new year, and he won't say anything more than that. And since we only had 15 minutes with the senator and a lot of ground to cover, I chose to leave it at that. But there was still plenty to talk about. Durbin is chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Majority Whip, the number two behind Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer. Of course, all that changes in less than a month. When new senators are sworn in January, Republicans are retaking control of the Senate, and Durbin's Democratic Party will be out of power. In order to accommodate the senator's schedule, we spoke earlier this morning. Because of that, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Senator Durbin, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Be with you, Brian.
The last time I checked, the Senate had confirmed 233 of President Biden's nominees to federal judgeships. All of them go through your Judiciary Committee. Can you briefly put that into context for us?
If we approve two judges this week, which I expect, it'll be a new record in terms of filling the vacancies in the federal courts. Over the last 4 years under President Biden, we will have filled 235 vacancies. That is one-fourth of the federal judiciary, one out of every four federal judges. It was a big job. We had a lot of good nominees, and the good news is we did it with 85% of the nominees being approved on a bipartisan basis. So to have Democrats and Republicans agree on anything is newsworthy, but something as important as a lifetime appointment to the federal bench is pretty important.
And the current number that I saw was seven more than during the Trump administration, for what that is worth. Although he did have more appellate judge vacancies, and that is, you know, one of the few things that I've seen come in for criticism recently is that you had called for, after the election, confirming every possible judicial nomination, but ultimately there was a deal meant to allow, what I think, more than a dozen district or trial judges to get votes in exchange for giving up on four appeals court vacancies. There have been
Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, some progressives have blasted that move. Why do you think that was justifiable?
Well, I can tell you this. It's a 51-49 Senate, and the rules of the Senate are written in a way that one senator can stop the train at any point. Almost always you're dealing with some bipartisan compromise to result in a good outcome. And that's what applied here. We ran out of time. Biden's presidency is going to be over in a few weeks, and we had to make a choice. Would we take more district judges and fewer appellate judges, or vice versa? We made the decision. I think it was the right one.
One of the nominees who didn't even get a vote is Adil Manji. On Monday, he wrote a letter accusing Republicans and a small number of your Democratic colleagues of caving to Islamophobia. What do you think of his critique? It's pretty unusual to see a nominee who doesn't get through the process speak out like that.
What happened to him and our committee was embarrassing. It was insulting. What they did to this poor man, who is an extraordinary attorney, recognized the highest levels in New York and New Jersey, was just unspeakable. To think that someone would question him, listen to the question that they asked him. One of the Republican senators said, "Do you celebrate the anniversary each year of 9/11 in your home?" They asked him that. Honest to God, they asked him that. And the man said, "Of course not. That was a terrorist act, which I condemn. I had friends and acquaintances who were victims in it. I can't imagine that you make that sort of accusation." It was so bad, the questioning of this man, because he is a Muslim American, that ultimately he was stopped and couldn't move forward. We couldn't approve him. There were several Democrats who weren't prepared to vote for him.
Let's move on, because I do want to ask you about a few of President-elect Trump's cabinet nominees. And I want to start with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He has rejected decades of scientific evidence in favor of vaccines against terrible diseases. What would you say, though, to Democrats who seem to be open to his nomination, maybe on food science or some other area where they might agree with him?
Well, I agree with him on several things, but I can just tell you, I think the man is totally unequipped to serve in this capacity and comes at it with a prejudice, which is dangerous. I underline the word dangerous. if we follow Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s vision of the world and treatment of vaccines and other things, innocent people will die. It'll take some time for us to realize how irresponsible this is, but you shouldn't put a person in this kind of a scientific responsibility with these prejudices, which he has. This notion that he's going to go in a war against fluoride in water, which we've done for 70 years and it's had positive health impact, particularly for children, that he's going to encourage raw milk as some sort of a medicinal approach to the problems people face when there's danger associated with it. The notion that vaccines, I mean, let me tell you this, I grew up in an era when polio was a reality. I had friends of mine who were stricken with polio, some of whom labored with the problems with it the rest of their lives. Mitch McConnell of Kentucky has been through this. And this notion of questioning polio vaccine at this point is totally irresponsible. So I come at his nomination with clear skepticism.
There are some who say this is what a plurality of Americans voted for. Maybe they should find out what it's like to live under some of the policies supported by the people they chose, be it extreme tariffs or, you know, a country where polio once again stalks our children. What do you think of that?
So many innocent victims are going to have to make a sacrifice to prove that these are irresponsible points of view. I feel badly for them. You know, with the social media being what it is today, you can start a campaign on a given issue and it can change America overnight. I've seen it happen. And to have someone at the highest level of the Trump administration with that kind of power is frightening.
So you will continue serving on the Judiciary Committee in the next Congress that takes power in January, although you will not be the chairman anymore because Republicans are taking control. There will still be a lot of nominees related to judiciary coming before you, though. And so I wanted to ask you about a few of those in particular. And maybe we should back up a step and say, what do you think of FBI Director Wray's decision to resign rather than being fired, as Trump seems to want to do?
I wish he hadn't done that. He had a 10-year term. It was designed in the law so that it would transcend beyond one president. And the notion is to try to make the director of the FBI as apolitical as possible. The fact that he would step down with the threats from the Trump administration that they were going to remove him, I think was a wrong decision. He should have stayed where he was for the good of the agency.
Your successor as chairman of the Judiciary Committee will be Senator Chuck Grassley. He wrote a letter to the FBI director urging him to resign. What did you think of that?
I disagreed with it. Chuck Grassley is a personal friend of mine, and we've done things together. I think historic things when it comes to criminal justice. I like him, I respect him, I disagree with his decision on FBI.
There are those who say that one of the things Chris Wray is doing is violating this idea of an anti-authoritarian playbook, a phrase you've been hearing a lot lately as obeying in advance. What do you think of that?
Well, the bottom line is if the FBI is not independent and professional, then people will question their integrity. Those who are on the other side politically have had questions about the FBI for a long time, and the agency has suffered as a result of it. But they do so many critical things to keep our country safe and our families safe that we're really losing something when we give up the integrity of this agency. We need an FBI we can trust, and I'm afraid all the questions that have been raised about it have left us in a position where many people don't trust it at all.
What do you think of the selection of Kash Patel to head the FBI?
How can you start off being the head of the FBI, the most powerful criminal investigative agency in the United States of America, and publish a list of 60 enemies? His book had a list of 60 enemies, which of course included a lot of people on the Democratic side. That is not the kind of background you're looking for in a person who has so much power as the head of the FBI.
He's also called for basically shutting down the Hoover building and sending all the agents out into field offices, I gather. I don't know if you can speak to some of the work that happens at the Hoover building, you know, counterterrorism, that sort of thing, that may be worthwhile and not the first thing to disband when someone gets in.
hoping that some, I'll have a chance, of course, in the Judiciary Committee to ask Mr. Patel directly. I'm hoping that he'll say he didn't mean it, or he said it for political impact, because it's a totally irresponsible statement. This notion of shutting down the headquarters of the most powerful criminal investigative agency in the world and dispersing them to field offices is irresponsible.
So, okay, so far you've raised questions about Kash Patel and RFK Jr. I know you've also had questions about Pam Bondi, the President-elect Trump's nominee to be Attorney General. Do you subscribe to the idea that Trump is trying to build a cabinet that can, you know, that would represent a threat to democratic self-governance in America, as some have made that case?
Yes, I'm very worried about it. You know, an all-star cast from Fox Broadcasting does not qualify you to run the government of the United States of America. So I'm sure that some of these people will eventually acknowledge that they get carried away in some of the things that they've said. And I want to give them that chance. It starts off very worrisome. We are setting a new standard when it comes to the cabinet of the President of the United States.
Earlier, when we were talking about judicial nominations, you said one senator can stop the train in the Senate based on the rules. Are Democrats prepared to do that over some of these nominees?
Well, we can slow it down for sure. But when it comes to the nominees, a simple majority applies, and you don't deal with the filibuster, which requires 60 votes. You know, it's 51-49. There are enough Republicans, if all of them agree, to approve each of the nominees.
Is that different, though, than what we saw Senator Tommy Tuberville hold up many Defense Department generalships and admiralships over the issue of reproductive health for a very long time? I mean, are Democrats considering tactics like that?
I haven't heard any conversation on that score. Let me just say, most of this interview has kind of dwelled on the question of controversy in nominations. The American people have a limited tolerance for that. We've got to stand up for what we think is right. But the bottom line is we've got to try to find room to agree on some things. The American people want us to solve problems, not just fight. And of course, there's a lot of controversy associated with nominations. But we're going to be measured and judged by what we achieve.
Well, I guess one of the reasons I'm asking about it is I sometimes wonder if, maybe I'll ask this as a question to you. Do you think Democrats are adequately rewarded by the American people for governing responsibly in a way that Republicans don't always do, whether it's in terms of the budget or nominations? Take it where you will.
Well, that's interesting. Just to step back and reflect on the body politic in America, Donald Trump won. He won clearly, with the Electoral College as well as the popular vote. And if you believe in this democracy, you've got to step back and admit that reality, something he didn't do 4 years ago. I admit the reality that not only did Donald Trump win, but his approach to government won. I mean, let's be honest about it. And it is a take no prisoners, madder than hell, I'm not going to take it anymore approach, which appears to reflect a large part of the electorate. It was focused on economic issues as well as cultural issues. And I acknowledge that fact. I've been around enough to see changes in the White House from time to time that reflect public sentiment. And Donald Trump's election certainly reflects that.
Well, I ask that in part because in the House, for example, Republicans are going to have an extremely thin majority. And if the past is any guide, they're going to have a hard time functionally governing, doing things like passing a budget. And I wonder if Democrats, as a party, and obviously you're in the Senate, not the House, but as a party, should Democrats help Republicans by providing votes to, say, avert a shutdown or make them figure it out among themselves?
Brian, that goes back to the point I made earlier. You know, we can find ways to generate and sustain political controversy, but we will be judged ultimately as to whether or not we improve the lot of working families and people across America. Not just whether we scored a headline in the morning paper or in some other source, but whether we get something done that's good for this country. The Democrats have got to show that they're not just against the new president, but they're for something that makes a positive difference in the lives of American families.
Well, and I guess that's one of the things that I am I'm questioning in myself and my own understanding of whether, you know, actually achieving things, passing major infrastructure bills, the CHIPS Act, all this stuff, it wasn't really rewarded by voters this time around. How do you reconcile that?
You got to do the right thing, even if the majority of voters don't feel at the time that it is the right thing. You just got to follow your conscience and do the right thing. Do I think we should deal with immigration? Yes, I do. I have a different approach than most Republicans, but I do believe there is room for bipartisan agreement here. And if we can do something finally after 30 years to repair the broken immigration system in America, make us safer, provide immigrants opportunity to come to this country in the right way, so be it. I think that's what the American people are looking for.
Senator Dick Durbin, I know you have to run. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Dick Durbin is the senior U.S. Senator for Illinois. I spoke with him earlier this morning. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.